I'm going to call the meeting back to order. If there are board members out in the hall. All right. So now I'm going to ask the election committee to report.
Okay, well, with our crack team of election supervisors, Les Radke and Janet Hoban and myself, we determined that after two rounds of counting the ballots, according to the single transferable vote method, the listener representatives and the votes are as follows. Top vote is Andrea Turner with 7, and then at a tie, Tracy Rosenberg with 6, and Dan Siegel with 6. Henry Knorr placed fourth with 3. So for the listener representatives, that Andrea, Tracy, and Dan are elected. So congratulations. And then as the staff representative, there were two candidates, Anthony and Laura. The votes were Laura Privis at 13 and Anthony at 9. And I should report that there was one invalid ballot cast in both of those votes, one invalid for the staff and one invalid for the listener. But those are the results. So our new delegates are Laura, Andrea, Dan, and Tracy. The ballots were invalid because essentially the listener nominees, candidates, had been written on the staff ballot, and the staff candidates had been written on the listener ballot, so we invalidated it for that reason. And as Janet points out, on one ballot there was both listeners and staff. Okay? So I won't write them up here unless... Right? Everybody got the votes? Great.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, Con.
I just wanted to add to this because we did two things. We were multitasking.
Yes.
Okay. The largest number of board members can be...
Use a microphone.
The largest number of board members for the GM hire can be at a meeting on Wednesday, January 18th. So what I will do is to contact the people and make certain that they can be then, and I will get back to everybody and let them know. And I've already made arrangements with Laura to set up a proper sound system, etc.
Okay, great.
And what will that be at 6 o'clock on Wednesday?
Six to 9:30 at
and
this point.
And it'll be in the performance studio.
Yes.
Then? Okay, I can attend until 8 o'clock then.
So okay. Good.
Okay. Great. Okay. Good. All right. So now we are ready to. The chair is ready to entertain a motion to adjourn as delegate assembly and reconvene.
So moved.
Okay. Second.
Second.
All right. Are there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Now we have reconvened as the local station board, and we are at the point that where we have reports. And our first report is from the IGM. So, Andrew, you're up. I'm sorry you're not sitting at the table, but please join us. Have a seat. Somebody give him a microphone. Give that man a microphone.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody, and happy, prosperous new year, the auspicious year of 2012. A little bit on fundraising to start. The December fundraiser brought in more than $130,000 over 4 days, but because of decreasing revenue from previous fundraisers, we do find ourselves facing a potential deficit situation as we go into the new financial year. And as of today, I don't have final numbers for December. They're not final. But it's evident that it is getting more difficult to raise money on air. There's no secret there. We already have more on-air fundraising than in the past, and we do need to seek out other avenues. We continue on a campaign to reach out to major donors and hope that by summer we will see some improvement from this revenue stream. We were going to do some of this last quarter. The Occupy movement stuff happened at the station. There was just not time. My program director was away for a month, but I am hoping to get back onto this in the second quarter and to explore this potential stream. Some of the deficit is due to excessive legal expenses, which continue to plague us. The KPFA craft fair returned approximately $30,000. The costs are not in yet for it. The final costs are not in yet for it. As the board knows, there is no budget for a development director. However, as I said, I am hopeful that a major donor campaign targeted at specific station needs may yield additional income in our second quarter. Our current membership number is 20,165 members. In my last report, I pointed out that KPFA fundraises more than 70 days a year. I also pointed out that WMNF in Tampa fundraises for a total of 2 weeks a year, and yet raises almost $500,000, that they bring in about the same daily tally as we do as KPFA in a much smaller market. They are number 19 in the market. We are number 4. So it says something about our lack of audience, and we really need to reach out and perhaps learn. There is talk of doing some kind of a workshop with WMNF people to see what they do, and I'd point out that the former manager at KPFA, Jim Bennett, was working down there. He is no longer. We may be calling on Jim too to talk about some of this. We have at KPFA a new e-newsletter. Two editions have been published. It's not the old folio, of course, but it does share information about KPFA. Other Pacifica stations have similar e-newsletters. It goes to about 5,000 addresses so far. Regarding our website, Roger Marquis, who gave a presentation the meeting before last, I believe, has been working on a redesign of the KPFA website. This is a work in progress. The process is complicated. Our website has a lot of functionality not evident on the front pages, happening behind the scenes. But we feel the overall appearance of the site can be much improved, including addition of video. Video is an increasingly important element online, as I'm sure all of you know, you watch YouTube, etc. And as I've said before, and you're very aware, radio is today a multimedia system. To expand audience, we have to update and improve our web presence. Mechanics Bank. I'm pleased to announce that yesterday we met with representatives of the local bank, Mechanics Bank, and I am pleased to report that KPFA will be transferring accounts from Wells Fargo to this bank, an independently owned local bank established in the area in 1905. I expect this will be completed by the end of next month. This change will save some banking fees and ensure KPFA is investing in the local community. I would like to point to the good work of the LSB Treasurer, Barbara Whitman, who suggested the bank in the first place, and the work of our business manager, Maria Negrete, who facilitated this change along with the foundation's CEO. Occupy coverage, as everybody knows, the Occupy movement has taken off and now is evident in perhaps more than 1,000 communities here and around the world. We expect to continue our coverage and plan a special series of programs in the spring that will explore where this movement might go from here. We acknowledge the importance of the Occupy statement in a tent, but we wish to seek out the deeper implications of this movement and what real and practical on-the-ground change, how that might happen in our society. What is the role and effectiveness of nonviolence, revolutionary pacifism, the anarchic black bloc, the militarization of police forces, and the increasing crackdown on civil rights? How can real social change happen? Drawing examples from the Earth Liberation Front, Earth First, the writings of Derek Jensen, and keeping in mind that some Black Panthers are still in jail today, 40 years later, it's a sobering reminder about the power of the state and the importance and responsibility to think deeply about social change and ways to implement it in a real and sustainable way. So we plan to address some of these questions. The recall. As many will know, there has been considerable discussion and publicity regarding the recall of Tracy Rosenberg. Currently, there are no ballots. I understand the PMB is responsible for issuing ballots. I know that an election supervisor was put forward by the foundation, but was not found acceptable, I understand, to the LSB. Though the foundation has been accused in some quarters of dragging its feet, this has not anything to do with KPFA management. It's a concern of this body, I understand, and the Pacifica National Board. Because of the confusion regarding the recall, I'm calling for an on-air debate and an opportunity for representation of various positions on the air. Such a debate might take place on a Sunday evening. We're talking about a debate over the recall. In talking about a debate over the recall, we need to remember that under election guidelines, staff cannot participate on air in any endorsement or debate with any listener candidate. Tracy is a listener rep, and if there is a debate, it must be with a listener, not a staff member, paid or unpaid. Now, I want to spend just a little bit of time, not much, clarifying a few issues which I think are important to get on the record. There was a recent mailer from Save KPFA saying that Tracy Rosenberg has been the principal defender of the current regime at Pacifica, the corporation that owns KPFA, I would say the foundation that owns KPFA. With Rosenberg's support, that regime has declared war on KPFA's listeners and workers. It's purged the KPFA's biggest fundraiser, the most listened to local program, The Morning Show, causing morning pledges to drop by more than half. Well, KPFA finances improved by over $500,000 in 2011 after two consecutive years or more of $500,000 deficits. The station's finances were stabilized over the past 12 months per the accounting firm of Wisdom Kimmeling, who do our annual financial audits. I want to point out also that when looking at the morning show versus the morning mix, one has to look at the two-hour block, which includes Democracy Now! And the morning mix. When the morning show was on air, it probably pulled in between $10,000 and $11,000 at its best. Currently, Democracy Now! At 7 o'clock pulls in about $4,000, the morning show $2,000, so that's $6,000. If you do the maths, if you multiply by 50, which is 50 days of fundraising across the year, you'll see that multiplying $11,000 by 50 will give you $550,000, but you have to deduct the cost of doing the show, which was in excess of $150,000. So the real net income of the morning show was about $400,000. The real net income of the current show, adding Democracy Now!, is about $8,000 by 50. It's about $300,000. So there's about $150,000 difference, actually. There was talk of conducted illegal retaliatory layoffs. The National Labor Relations Board stated in 2010 that layoffs were neither illegal nor retaliatory. The entire Pacifica National Board voted unanimously to approve the layoff plan. The information given in the Save KPFA mailer is not accurate, and it distorts the real situation. That we wasted more than $80,000 of listener money on anti-union law firms. Well, the law firm the petitioners complain about is also used by KQED, the Fine Arts Museum of San Francisco, and the Jewish Community Center of San Francisco. Legal bills were caused by five grievances to the Labor Relations Board, all five dismissed. One is currently on appeal after receiving an initial judgment of no merit and a failed arbitration hearing where Pacifica was upheld. None of this was included in the publicity to our listeners. That we diverted workers' retirement contributions for other purposes. The National Board, by unanimous consent, hired a pension specialist to file a correction of all late payments dating back to 2005. When Save KPFA, as Sherry Gettleman and Dan Siegel were serving in Ms. Engelhardt's position in 2007 and 2008, many pension payments were also late. The current correction will pay back all the penalties and interest. All payments are now current. That we illegally barred KPFA's elected representative from taking seats on the Pacifica board. The KPFA representative who was causing the problem, Dan Siegel, was serving as Oakland's Mayor Gene Kwan's legal advisor. Pacifica's bylaws prevent a person who holds a political appointment from serving on the board and ask them to resign one position or the other. Mr. Siegel refused to resign either position and told the court he did not have a political position on the Kwan administration. He later resigned from the legal advisor position due to what appeared to be a conflict of interest. I point these things out because there's been a lot of misinformation, and I'm hoping that some kind of debate may clarify this so our listeners can get the full picture. Thank you very much.
Okay. Andrew, I presume you have your report in writing again, so we can...
I'll be happy to send it to the
Craig.
Secretary. Yes.
Okay, thank you very much. We've found that very helpful to have the written statements. It's now... we have 15 more minutes on this item, and I would suggest that board members have an opportunity to ask questions and get responses. So, Dan?
Just on the crafts fair, did you say that the gross income from the crafts fair was $30,000 or so? Is that what?
My understanding that would be a net figure. So far, none of these numbers are concrete at this point. These are preliminary numbers. That's a net figure of net profit of $30,000.
Okay, but I thought you said it didn't include all the expenses.
That's a net figure. The expenses have been deducted. That's a net figure, yeah.
Okay, so...
Profit. Net $30,000 profit.
Okay. Again, I thought what you said when you gave the report was that it did not include all the expenses.
I said there were still some outstanding expenses, but most of them have come in. There are still some bills that have not been paid.
Okay. Because if it is a net figure, that's good, because when we were looking at the budget for this year, it appeared that the crafts fair was basically breaking even. So if we're actually making money on it, that's significant.
I understand that we've made, roughly $30,000, correct.
Okay. I see Mal, Jack, Don, and Sharam. I have a couple of questions for Andrew, and I'll just abuse the chair by asking them right now. Last year, Andrew, we were working on this issue of a booster tower in Santa Cruz, and I was just recently, over the holidays, contacted by a friend of mine in Santa Cruz who I had contacted about that, and she asked me what had happened because she said there has been no perceived improvement in KPFA's reception in the Santa Cruz area. So I'm hoping that you can answer that. I have three questions, and let me just put them out there, and then you can answer them all at once. The other is, I'm curious to know, you said about 5,000 people receive the newsletter. Those are people, I assume, who have given their email addresses to KPFA. I'm curious to know whether you've had any responses to the newsletter and what those are, and whether or not you've considered asking on air, for people to send in their email addresses so that they can receive the newsletter. It seems to me that would be a good way to do it. And the last thing is, I want to know why the December fund drive was ended early. So those are my three questions.
Let me start with the last question first. It was a controversial decision. We were struggling in the first few days of that fundraiser. I felt that it was probably better to cut our losses. In fact, on the last day when we did cut, I think we made $60,000 on that last day. I think before that we'd been making in the region of high 20s. We needed to be making, I think it was roughly $38,000 a day to meet our goal. I felt that rather than put more pressure on our staff and on the listeners so close to Christmas, that we should finish a day early. We probably missed out on maybe $20,000 or $30,000 had we have continued for an extra day. And I thought that I would keep our powder dry for another time. I mean, that's why the decision was made. To be honest with you, I'm not sure it was the right or the wrong decision, but it was a decision made at the time. In terms of the newsletter, yes, that's a very good suggestion. We will be also putting a tab on the website encouraging people to include their email addresses. I'm hoping also that in our fund drives in the phone room, we'll be asking listeners to contribute their email addresses, though that takes a little bit more time to do in a noisy environment. It's a little bit difficult, but we're working on it. And yes, we should also announce on air that we are collecting those email addresses. In terms of Santa Cruz, the transmitter was turned, the 10-watt transmitter was turned on. It remained on, I think, for a month, maybe 6 weeks. There's some logistical paperwork that has not been finalized down at Santa Cruz. The manager down there has been in touch with the university. The university, my understanding is because the paperwork had not been filed, I think it was at their end with their facilities department. I can't remember the exact name of the department, but one of their facilities departments down there needed engineering drawings and a full description of what the transmitter was and how much power it was using, which is not very much. All of that information has been furnished to the station, but as of now, my understanding is, yes, the transmitter was turned off. And I'm still discussing and in negotiation with the manager in Santa Cruz to try to get that clarified. I think we're waiting currently on information from the university's... I can't remember the name of the department, but the department responsible for...
Facilities,
yeah.
Okay. Let's see, I saw a hand over here. Okay, Mal, and then Don. Mal, go ahead.
Oh. It's my understanding. Yeah. It's my understanding that the Pacifica bylaws have some language prohibitions about candidates being on air during the period of the election. It is my understanding also that Ms. Rosenberg was on the air this last week, and she is currently the subject of a recall election. And I'm wondering if you looked into to what extent that violates the rules and what is to be done about that.
I think if one listens to that interview, there was no talk of the recall. She wasn't representing herself as someone from the Pacifica board. She was answering questions about the current media market in the Bay Area. And when asked about Pacifica finances as chair of the National Finance Board, she made some commentary. I don't know whether that violates anything. I don't believe it does.
It's my understanding that the rules apply to being on air regardless of the subject matter. Con Hallinan was interviewed about Afghanistan during the general period of an election in which he became a candidate, and he was penalized for that. So I think you might want to either reconsider looking at this incident or establishing a definite definition which would cover all people.
Thank you. Yeah, I agree that we should look into that.
Okay. I have Don, Khan, anyone else? Oh, Jack and Sharam. I'm sorry.
No, you
okay.
But go ahead.
Okay. All right. Okay, so Jack, Don, and Sharam. Did I miss somebody?
Okay. First, on the email newsletter, Andrew, I did not receive it, but I am utterly certain that KPFA has my email address. So I would very much appreciate being on the list to receive it. Second, Second, I want to clarify something about the crafts fair and see if my understanding matches your understanding, because there's been considerable discussion about the crafts fair in the board. My understanding is that operationally, the crafts fair is completely self-supporting. That is, that the crafts fair takes in a gross amount of money. What is subtracted from that gross amount of money are all of the salaries and expenses having to do with the production of the crafts fair, and that it is the difference between those, in this case, approximately $30,000, that comes to KPFA. In other words, putting it a different way, there is no actual money in KPFA's budget that goes to the crafts fair. Is that your understanding?
Yes, yes, it is.
Okay. So we, so that, so putting it yet another way, if the crafts fair were simply done away with, there would not be any resulting KPFA money to invest in something else as a result of canceling the crafts fair. Am I correct in that?
I believe you are.
Thank you very much.
Okay. We're going to have to move along quickly now. We're running out of time on this agenda item. I have Don and Sharam. Go ahead, Don.
Okay. My understanding, Andrew, since this is our first encounter in person, is that when you took on the interim general manager position, you were very concerned about the decline in membership of KPFA. So you've just indicated in your report that the membership is not responding to pleas for money. I'm wondering what you have done in your interim tenure here to increase the numbers of members in KPFA?
First of all, I don't think it's just me that notices these numbers. I think it's universal across the network at the LSB and certainly the Pacifica National Board. All of the stations are having difficulty with membership, with numbers, and with raising money. It's not common to KPFA.
Oh, and, I see.
Yeah, well, I think most of the LSB is aware of that. What have I done personally? Well, I've tried to continue past practice, which is raising money on the air. I think, as you probably know, we don't have development, but we have called in some development assistance, and we have some plans which have not yet been implemented. In my report, I stated I was hoping to do that last quarter. My program director was away for the month, so I was effectively doing one and a half jobs, so I actually didn't have time to do it. I am hoping to do it in the coming quarter. That is, reach out for money, not so much as raising new membership, which is another question.
Well, that was my question. What were you doing to increase the membership?
Well, I'm trying to manage a radio station with a group of programmers, and we're trying to do the best programming we can. I think we can all improve. Raising the membership is an element of good programming and perhaps some publicity, which we don't have a budget for. To some extent, my hands are tied. Without a development director and without publicity, and a website that really needs to be upgraded to be more in line with current websites. I think we need to spend much more time developing our web presence, because I think there's potential audience available through reaching out on the internet. And that's also been a project that I've been working with fairly consistently for 6 months with a small committee at KPFA. And as I said in my report, Roger Marquis has... is currently working on a redesign of our website, so I'm hoping that will have some impact on listenership and on new membership.
Okay, Don, so I think we I need to move on, okay? I'm sorry.
Too bad, because I got a few more. But I guess we'll get them next time.
That's right. We're running out of time here. So, Sharam, and then Andrea has asked to be on the list as well. Go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. I guess I wasn't clear on this crafts fair issue that came up last year, too. We're going to revisit it. So the figure is actually what we're saying is the operation is self-sustaining in the sense that it pays for salaried employees and the other expenses and everything else. And when compared to last year, how did our revenues look? Do you have any idea? Does it look better?
I think we made a little bit more money last year, but I excuse me, we didn't.
I think it was 23 or 24.
Was it?
Yeah, because you brought it up in the budget.
Okay, I think I must be thinking of the projected revenue. I think we projected for more money. Let me be clear about the craft fair. I think there's a feeling that I have some problem with the craft fair, which I don't. The money that whilst there's a salary line, a half-time position with benefits for a craft fair director, that is has been deducted to get that $30,000 figure. You understand what I'm clear? I do not have a problem with the craft fair. I was unable to attend it this year. I was out of the state, unfortunately. What I would like to say that there's a hidden benefit actually of the craft fair, and that a lot of people who are the crafters have been very strong supporters of KPFA for many years, and to disband in the craft fair would have a knock-on effect for those people individually and their friends. It would be, if there was any sense of closing down the craft fair, that would have to be a very serious consideration. It's like an invisible benefit of the craft fair.
I have one quick question, if you will. Since we're talking about revenues related to events, how about the other events that KPFA holds, the talk series and things like that? Do we have any numbers on those, how we are doing in terms of revenue and expenses?
That's a very good question. I don't have specific numbers. I've asked our business manager to furnish them, and she will. We've had some very successful events. They are making money for the station. They certainly make money for the station when we run them on our air, along with Dan Siegel's suggestion that Pacifica National becomes more aggressive in its programming. I think that many of these speeches would be great broadcast around the network, and they're not currently broadcast around the network. I think there could be a cost saving for the foundation by broadcasting them around the network, because the premiums are all homegrown. We duplicate the CDs ourselves, and so I think that's a good suggestion, and I've actually suggested that, and others have too. But I would like to get a full accounting of actually how much money we do make and how much they cost. I don't have that.
Okay. I don't want to cut off any discussion. We are over time for this point on the agenda. There are now three people on the list. Andrea, and Tracy all have asked to speak. I'm willing to recognize those people as long as everybody recognizes that we're pushing the limits on time. Okay, so Andrea.
Yes. Hi, Andrew. I understand that you were called to New York to work. Was that it?
No, I was there doing some personal business, but not official KPFA work, although whenever I'm there, I spend a day usually at the Pacifica Station.
Okay, yeah. I just wanted to make sure that we won't be charged for it, and that WBAI will pay for it if you were working there. That's all. Just wanted to make sure you didn't come out of our budget. Okay, great. You were there for your personal time and not for work at WBAI.
Are you saying did KPFA pay for me to go
no,
there?
No. I was just inquiring to whether you were working for WBAI when you were called to New York.
Every Thursday there's a manager's phone conference, and
I was
at the station to participate in that phone conference, plus to catch up with some old colleagues.
Okay, great. Thank you. That's
all. Okay.
Just watching out for the budget.
Andrew.
I just wanted to thank you, by the way. I really appreciate, Andrew, your detailed reports, and I appreciate that I feel like I'm getting factual information. I want to just make it clear with the board a little bit about the crafts fair thing. You know, I kind of, maybe I misinterpreted something, but I thought it was our job to ask questions and to try to investigate and review and just try to see if we're doing the best we can. And I think sometimes when we assume that things just roll over from year to year and we don't really stick our heads in there, that I don't know, maybe the moss can grow. Or maybe there's innovative ways of approaching things. I was under the impression that we were going to get a report about the crafts fair and that there was going to be a final kind of cost-benefit, what the whole thing. Yeah. So I'm still looking forward to that. I'm still hoping that that's going to come. And likewise, you know, and again, it's for the purposes of thinking about, is there ways to integrate the crafts fair with other things? Are there other possibilities? But I guess I just want the real picture of it, and I think that's what I haven't gotten since I've been on the board, so that's why I ask. I'm not trying to be a pill, and I'm not trying to disrespect anybody.
Just to clarify, we previously made a decision to ask Jan Eitri to meet with the board and discuss it. She has indicated her willingness to do that and just asked that it happen after January because she's working on the wrap-up of the crafts fair during the month of January. So I will check with her and see, you know, which meeting she'd like to attend. I assume it will be either February or March. Okay, Sasha. No way. Tracy, let me call it. Tracy's next on the list and then... Okay, go ahead, Tracy.
Yeah, just briefly on the fund drive, my recollection of where we were was that, you know, there had been an observation that the fund drive, shall we say, profit margin between expenses and revenue was kind of on a downward trajectory, and we talked about the fact that it was often occurring in thunderstorms in December, and that was depressing attendance and those kinds of things. What is good from Andrew's preliminary report to hear is that the dwindling appears to have stopped and gone a bit in the opposite direction. $30,000 is not a windfall, but it's more than $23,000, so it suggests that Jan is making adjustments in how she manages the crafts fair to keep that margin there, which is terrific, and I think she deserves some plaudits for that because the crafts fair numbers were trending a certain way, and she obviously did some things to try to improve that. That's what you want an employee to do. The Crafts Fair is a fundraising event, so the point is not for it to be self-sustaining. The point is for it to make funds and contribute those to overall operations. So let's just be clear about that. Self-sustaining fundraising events don't keep an organization going. The other, I guess, quick thing to say is that when you're doing an analysis, and I think Jan understands this perfectly because I did see her report last year, finally, via Levarne, and I actually thought that she did a pretty good job. So if she brings that report to this board in February or in March, I think, Andrea, you'll feel better. She did a pretty thorough and, you know, comprehensive report. But when you are doing a sort of, you know, cost-benefit analysis for something specific, part of what you need to do is pull out your overall operating expenses and determine a percentage that impacts the particular program that you're trying to analyze. In other words, it may be a small percentage, but a percentage of your utilities, a percentage of all of your fixed expenses, because any operation or program that you operate takes a proportion of your general expenses, so that's what you want to see sort of offset against. So basically you have direct expenses, then indirect expenses, and revenue. So I'm hoping that's the kind of report that we'll see, and I think that should allow us to figure out
Tracy,
what
it
the benefits are.
It needs to be a little bit more detailed than that.
Okay. Tracy. Okay, I was just going to comment that this is a time for people to ask Andrew questions about his report, and I'd appreciate if people would stick to that.
Sometimes accounting analysis is not simple.
What? We are way out of time. Okay.
Just a very quick request. When we get that report on the crafts fair,
Do you have a question for
yes,
Andrew?
Yes, could it also include, and this is a harder This is more of a guesstimate. Whether you think the crafts fair gives us negative or positive publicity and might help us in other ways. In other words, doing the crafts fair, does it have a negative because people hate it and they think badly of it because we're doing an evil thing? Or is it positive publicity for us? You mentioned problems getting publicity. Do you think the crafts fair offers us some positive publicity. And what might the value of that be? Or do you think it offers us negative publicity? I also want to say, does it sound to you, do you think that's possible for us to get that in the report, first of all? And then the other question would be, it sounds to me, if we went from $23,000 to $30,000 profit, that it was just under 30% increase. That sounds pretty good to me. What do you think?
Well, I think, first of all, it's a preliminary figure. Look, the craft fair is absolutely positive. I mean, if it's losing money, it's a negative, but in some ways it would still be a positive because, as I said, there's an invisible asset to the craft fair. It's very good public relations. People love it. Perhaps we could reach out to other communities to diversify it somewhat. I think that would be something which could be considered and perhaps even improve the craft fair.
Okay. Thank you all very much. Thank you, Andrew. And we are now going to move on to the treasurer's report.
Good afternoon, everybody. We'll make up for a little of this time because my report's really short. As Andrew stated, he didn't have any hard figures yet, and that can be somewhat explained by the fact that the auditors have been working with the national office staff, and they have not produced reports for October and November yet that are complete. We have some figures that our business manager contributes to those reports, but it's really kind of ridiculous to look at just part of the stuff. And also, I noted that the November meeting, one of the things, I passed out three different versions of reports for you. One compared LSB desires at a certain time and then the budget that the PNB passed for us. Another was a preliminary year-end report. I do have about 10 or 12 of those left that I brought today in case anybody's just dying to have some paper. But you did get that report last time, and it's not final. It's not any more final than it was last time. And I forget what the third thing was, but it was some kind of comparison of October expenses over, incomplete report or non-finalized report for this year and the last 2 years. So, but one thing I didn't do at that point was tell you how much cash we had in the bank at the end of October. And this is known as the observing and learning from and keeping track of our expenses and whatnot by examining the cash flow. Cash flow is a different kind of report that gets issued compared to the finance reports where we have all the different categories and so on. So I'm going to tell you what the cash flow was on October 31st. We had $403,314 in the bank. And we had, at that point, $35,483 worth of bills just ready to be paid next out of that $403,000. It's a little hard to go back and reconstruct what payables were due at the end of November, but I do have what the cash in the bank was at the end of November, which was $267,876. At the end of December, and this again these are figures that are there's still things being entered into the books, but the figure I got from Maria was $415,000 about we had in the bank December 31st, January 1st, and as of yesterday we had $8,800 worth of bills just ready to be paid. So that gives you a little picture of the cash flow. Some of you will remember that we were embarked on a director's inspection a couple of months ago, and that has been in abeyance during the time that the national office was going through the audit, and I'm assuming we will pick that up again soon. Laura and I were part of that team, and Brian Edwards Tiekert. I was representing Andrea Turner, and Brian is representing Dan Siegel.
Thank you.
And so we'll be reporting more on that later. Let's see, what else did I have to tell you? Oh, one of the things that the auditor, I did attend a meeting with the auditor and our business manager, and I was really heartened to know that he's going to recommend that we change our accounting system. As you all have experienced when I'm reporting, and I guess this has happened with other treasurers, reports come out and then they don't exactly agree with things in the national office, and it's a very contorted system that's been in use and has been developed as it showed we needed something to fix, and they would fix it by adding this kind of an element or that sort of a new review. And it's just not a very good system. It's filled with potential for problems. And I'm, although changing everything will be time-consuming and so on, I really look forward to this making a great deal of difference for us eventually in the positive way. And one thing that I will add about this business of how much net income from the crafts fair was, I also spoke with our business manager yesterday, and the only expenses that she anticipates are still coming in, she estimated to be about $5,000 worth. So the $30,000 figure that we know of now will be only reduced by about $5,000. It's not lots of expenses that haven't been accounted for. And if anybody has any questions.
Any questions for Barbara? Okay. Once again, we thank you, Barbara, for keeping us informed. Do you have a question?
I'm just wondering if there's going to be a written report or
not this time.
No written report this time, but she'll catch us up to date next time.
Craig will have those cash in the bank figures in the minutes.
Okay. All right.
One question. Could you elaborate a little bit about a new accounting system? What does that cost? What might it cost? How long would it take to install, things like that?
Mm-hmm. No, I couldn't tell you all those things right now. This is a new recommendation. I see Tracy waving her hand. She probably knows something about that. Maybe when she gives the PNB report, she can say something about that.
Okay. Any other questions for Barbara? All right. Thank you, Barbara. All right. We're skipping the break. Remember, you already had your break. Don't pay any attention to what it says on the sheet of paper. Now we're moving on to committee reports. And the first committee report is the PMB. PMB members wanting to report. Tracy, go ahead.
All right. I'll cover a couple of things. As is not unusual this time of year, many things are being postponed to new PNBs and upcoming in-person meetings. A couple of the things, it's just too tempting to do this time of year. There's a couple of things that are in the hopper that I'll just briefly talk about. One is a National Program Council policy. Another has to do with whether or not meetings that don't, committee meetings in general, that don't meet quorum might be streamed if they have non-binding conversations. A third has to do with setting up some protocols for program director searches and possibly for GM searches at all, and tightening and consistencing that up from station to station. None of these things have been passed. They've all been proposed. The text of proposed motions from committee is, always available upon request. The audit is underway with Wisdom and Kimmerling LLC from New York, as people have said. I believe, based on what the auditor told me, we'll have preliminary numbers in January, although he probably will not be able to certify them at the end of January. That probably won't happen till mid to late February. And there is some, technical difference between preliminary numbers and certified numbers, but he believes that they'll be fairly accurate, even though he may not officially sign off on them. Other financial stuff, we are trying to implement a consistent file naming protocol, which will help with financial records. Right now, they're named all kinds of things depending on people's whim, and we create vast financial archives, and then we can't find anything. So we're working on that. On the recommended software change, it's not recommended yet. Wisdom and Kimmerling has a client who's going to make this transition from a system like we have to the recommended system, and what Wisdom told us is he's going to wait and see how it goes for them and what the problems are, and then sort of advise us if this is good, bad, middling, and what the pros and cons are, which I think is good. So we won't have to be kind of the trial and error, the trial monkey for it. Basically, what it would be is a switch to Microsoft Dynamics. We would continue with Great Plains. It's not a huge change in our system. What we would do is we would lose the program called Report Writer, which is apparently the bane of every business manager's existence. And if we are able to do that, that should be a significant improvement in the financial system drives me crazy factor, which is not small. Whether or not our base accounting system would also switch is something that isn't being dealt with. Great Plains has some real negatives, so the question becomes whether we're going to make a more comprehensive transition or just switch from Microsoft, I guess, solutions to Microsoft Dynamics. But from everything I've seen, the loss of Report Writer is something to jump up and down about. The National Finance Committee is also going to review. There's a project at the Los Angeles station for a solar canopy, which in some ways is exciting, and they've been doing independent fundraising for it and raised about $20,000-$25,000. On the other hand, there are also some projected problems and some financial obligations that it ties the station to. KPFK is now the most profitable station with the largest listener revenue by a substantial margin in the network. So they have some money to throw around, but we're going to review a bit whether a solar canopy is the right way to spend it. What else? The in-person meeting will be in Los Angeles at the end of January. It's the last weekend in January, and I don't know what the dates are or where it is yet. Supposedly, we will find out what hotel it's at instantaneously. And is there anything else? I think that's pretty much it. Just two quick points, sort of like personal points of privilege. Congratulations on Mechanics Bank. I feel kind of obligated to tell you guys that I had a conversation with Laura Lavati of the French American Charitable Trust about KPFA a couple days ago, and one of the things that she told me is there is a community campaign underway in the city of Richmond to boycott Mechanics Bank because of the terrible things that they're doing in collaboration with Chevron to destroy the local community in Richmond. And that it was important that activists not be misled and think that Mechanics Bank is any better than Bank of America and Wells Fargo. So I think that may disappoint us, but what are you going to do? So it goes. we do need certain services that we couldn't always get from credit unions, so we may just need to move on. But I said I would receive the information and pass it on. I don't know what else I can do. And, okay, I'm going to stop there and whatever Dan and Laura have to add.
Okay, Laura, Dan?
And I'll write this down.
Dan, do you want to?
I guess just to say we're also working on evaluations of our ED and CFO.
Okay. Dan, you want to add anything?
I think Tracy and Laura have covered.
Okay. Andrea?
The personnel committee has been meeting on the national level to do the evaluations of the CFO and the ED. So, and we also have been working on, you know, a process that we would like to put in place for all of the network to go through. So we'll probably do that at the in-person meeting to wrap it up at that time. Okay? Great.
Okay, I want to say that I personally intend to go to Los Angeles to be at the PMB meeting. I figure it's probably the only chance I'll get in the next couple of years to meet some of these people that I talk to on the phone all the time. And I encourage other people to do it. You know, it's not such a bad trip, and the weather's guaranteed to be better than here. so Just putting that out there. Any other board members have questions for the PMB members? Jack, use the mic.
I'll ask the same question of the PNB members that I used to ask of the executive board of my own union. Why are you meeting in a hotel rather than in some union hall that you could get for free? And why are you spending money on hotel rooms for people flying in instead of staying at friends' houses? It seems to me a considerable expense to do all that money for hotels, which are probably non-union anyway. So there you go.
Anybody want to respond?
Well, Dan? I'm staying with Occupy.
Use a microphone, Dan, please.
You know, there has been considerable experimentation on the national board level looking for alternative sites. One of the issues is how to efficiently maximize the time of people together. And as you know, L.A. is a pretty big place. And if you have a couple of dozen people scattered all around the city, we could easily be spending 3 or 4 hours a day commuting to wherever the meeting is. My understanding is that the hotel they're looking at, which, by the way, for people who are planning, I don't know the name of it, but it's close to the intersection of the 405 and 10 freeways, which means kind of Santa Monica area, is reasonably priced. In exchange for staying at the hotel, they give us free meeting rooms. You know, there's a shuttle service that is part of the deal to move people around. So, I mean, I understand the point, but it seems like there's a balance that takes place between trying to do this economically and also trying to do it conveniently. You know, so.
Okay, thank you. Any other questions for the PMB members? Thank you all very much for your service. We appreciate it. The next committee report is the Personnel Committee. Khan.
Okay, well, this will be very short. And since we now have a tentative date of Wednesday, January 18th, for the interviews, I will have to check that with the subjects and get back to everybody. However, one thing I want to do is...
Phillips? Is to excuse me. I think we have to ask. Well, I don't know. Is it all right if Andrew is here for this?
Yeah, because there's nothing to it.
Okay. Go ahead.
All I'm going to say is that the meeting on the 18th is solely for the purpose of interviews. That any content questions, etc., will be in the February LSB meeting. Okay, so that I want. That understood for our four people. That's all. That's the only thing. And the other thing is I will contact everybody on the board and tell them what the status is of the January 18th meeting. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Development Committee. We have the Development Committee's fallen by the wayside, I think. It's not developing. Dan.
Yeah. I wanted to ask Andrew a question about the development stuff because I know, and I was one who was not thrilled, that when we adopted the budget, we did not include funding for a development director. But I think that you advised us at the time that despite not having a development director, there might be some money for a person to give us some hours as a consultant, and wondered if that was happening, and if so, what the results were.
Thanks, Dan. We have, we did some consultation with Kim Klein last year. She's come up with a few ideas. We haven't met for probably 2 months. We do plan to meet again soon, one. to develop some of those ideas. Look, I'll be very happy to bring them to the next meeting, something more specific. We have some ideas, but I don't have them in front of me now. Secondly, I can't remember what I was going to say. Okay, moving right along. Good. Is that sufficient? Good.
Excuse me, the Outreach Committee hasn't had, I don't think it's had meetings in the last month, but outreach has been happening. Perrine, Rick, a variety of people have, they staffed the table at the Crafts Fair, and and also various KPFA events. There's been, again, it hasn't been coordinated through necessarily through meetings, but we are going to be having another outreach meeting on January 11th, which is coming right up. January 11th, Wednesday, this coming Wednesday, at 7 o'clock at the Grassroots House at 2022 Blake Street. You're cordially invited to attend. I mean, right now we're sort of in a triage kind of, you know, we've sort of maxed out of we do tabling. And various activities like Rick and some other volunteers have taken flyers and so forth to various Occupy events, and trying to increase our visibility. Sadly, because we don't have any money, we can't really do anything more highly visible. And I think it'd be interesting to think about, like, as we think about the Crafts Fair, for example, is there a way to, like, would we want to buy billboard space? And try to, you know, maybe some of the key of this development outreach event thing is to actually spend money and invest in a higher visibility thing. And as we're talking about the development committee, I certainly wonder if there should be some kind of integration. I guess I'm still looking to see the overall plan for increasing listenership and the overall plan that all the committees could support and help to implement. That's what I'm looking for.
I assume the outreach committee plans to be, I noticed that this is a big month for KPFA events. There seem to be four big speaker events scheduled, and you guys always seem to have a table at those things.
Yeah, I mean, what's been happening is that people are doing that through their own kind of, I guess you've been doing it as well, sort of. The theory goes like this. If it's a KPFA event, it's probably been pretty well publicized because it's been on KPFA, and those folks don't really need to find out about this cool little radio station. The trick is to try to get to places where they don't know about us. And so that's why the Occupy stuff has been, I think, a bit more effective. I don't know if we'll see that, how long it would take to see and to reap the fruits of all that coverage and that outreaching to see if that turns into new listenerships. But I was kind of psyched to hear some programmers plugging like $25 memberships, because I think that actually is part of where, if we're looking for younger listeners, if we're looking for that kind of diversity, I think that's a good strategy. But anyway, yes, there's it in terms of also integrating the e-newsletter, I think we need to be thinking about how we put out our call for volunteers, because we on the outreach committee could certainly use more volunteers and more energy and more effort and try to get that internal communication to be serving all these different needs.
Okay, thank you. Technology committee.
I will just report that the tech committee completed 2011 with an unmarred record of failure. To meet. The committee has not met since, I believe, September or August of 2010.
Thank you, Henry. All right, now we're at
You're welcome.
We're at the point of staff reports.
I have a question.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Andre.
Does that mean that we don't want to have a technology committee, or does that mean that the tech needs are being served through Andrew's internal workings with Roger, and is that the reality, or?
We're talking about the National Tech Committee. That's a PNB committee with reps from the stations. It's certainly not the case that we don't need one, in my opinion. I think we badly need one, but in fact, for the several years that it met, that I was on the committee when it did meet, it was kind of, most people used it as a opportunity to talk about some relatively, to me, relatively small technical issues about broadcast radio. There wasn't, I tried to launch a subcommittee of it or a task force or something to address the question of Pacifica's place on the web and what could be done about that. And there was actually, everybody thought it was a good idea and nobody else wanted to bother really. So whatever, I would say that for whatever reason, the people who, you know, get on the PNB and even people who are elected to the tech committee from the other stations are primarily focused on radio and not on other tech issues, and the radio issues are not probably very effectively dealt with in a committee format. The other thing I think that's happened is that there were such severe cuts in the national tech staff that there was really only, you know, one person left. I don't know, there just hasn't been much energy with it. It's a big disappointment to me, but I don't know how to change it.
Cynthia, go ahead.
This is about the National Affiliates Committee. I do listen to the messages. I mean, I do listen to the meetings. I'm not really an active member, but I'm very impressed by numbers of people around there, Campbell Johnson from D.C., Teresa Allen from Houston, and Heather Gray, Ursula. I'm sure our plans are still in process, but I really think the affiliates are, so they're interesting meetings to me. Maybe we can all participate a little more in supporting our that aspect of the Pacifica Foundation.
We need to review our membership on the national PMB committees and make sure that people who are currently serving are willing to continue and to fill in some holes, because there are some national committees where we don't have any representation, and they would like us to have representation. So perhaps we'll do that at the next meeting. I'll look into who our members are on the various PMB committees and send out an email, so watch for that and be thinking about it. Maybe Cynthia would agree to be our representative on the affiliates committee. And oh, you've been, okay, good. All right, excellent. I don't have the list in front of me, so I don't know who's who. I only know that I'm on two committees. Okay. So now we're ready for the staff reports. CWA, got anything to report?
Not really.
Okay. You sure? Nothing to report. Okay.
Ready for closed session.
Okay. Unpaid staff organization? David, Sharam, Anthony, somebody got something to say?
Well, we had an unpaid staff meeting early last month, quite well attended. I don't know, maybe close to 40 were in attendance. We are behind the timeline in creating an election committee to elect a new council, but we chose a committee at that meeting, so we're actually ahead of the game now.
Okay, anybody else? Okay. Andrea, give her a microphone. Somebody.
I may have brought this up at the last meeting under outreach, but I have a recollection of us having put on the agenda the discussion of town hall meeting. It seems to keep slipping off the agenda, and I'd like somebody to really write it down with a big dark crayon. Because we've been talking about an outreach.
Okay. So that's going to be on the next agenda. Excuse me.
I have a proposal. I would like to suggest that we set up a committee to look into the issue of town hall meetings. and come back with a recommendation to the next board meeting. My idea would be that it is a responsibility of the board to do this. We need to figure out a good time, a good place, and some notion of how the meeting would be handled, how it would go, who would talk, what, you know, how we deal with it, an agenda, and, you know, how we deal with the controversy and so on. I am willing to serve on that committee. Is anybody else? Yeah, Andrea.
Madam Chair, I'm not sure if you're supposed to make proposals.
Okay.
But I would like to...
Somebody else make the proposal.
...have it be known that a guy named Sam Herndell, I don't know, if you remember when we were up north in whatever little town that was...
Roner Park,
thank you, wherever I was. And there were folks outside with a table, the Petaluma folks. They asked us then, and they've been asking us, if they could host that meeting. So I'd like to honor that. I think we should go where the energy is. And I think it'd be really fun to support them and to use that as an outreach opportunity and an opportunity to discuss issues. I think we could broadcast the town hall meeting or something. But anyway, so I would like to invite people. I'd like to invite people to work with them in the planning of the town hall meeting. Or maybe we could just develop our proposals for next meeting.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I think that's the way to do it. Sasha, give her a microphone.
I think one of the first things that should happen is that some discussion should be, and if it's on the committee level, you know, that's fine, and I'd be willing to help with that, as to the purpose of the town hall meeting.
Okay, I see a bunch of hands. I'll call on them all. Cynthia, and then Andrea, and then Laura. Go ahead, Cynthia.
This is not town hall meeting. Totally relevant, but because when just addressing the need for something like this, the members of our little committee of the Berkeley Fellowship were extremely confused about what's going on at KPFA. So they just said, let's us sponsor something. So you are all invited. We haven't set up the structure. And I'm not saying it's a KPFA town hall meeting, but it's a meeting over at the Berkeley Fellowship on Monday the 30th, because there is a great need for this, even in this area, and I can't imagine why there wouldn't be a meeting in the great need in other areas. So there is a meeting on Monday the 30th. I'll try to put out an email to you. You are all invited. We haven't worked out totally the structure, but we would totally love everyone to come and have face-to-face discussions on what is going on at KPFA. But anyway, I think there's a great need for town hall meetings, and not to mention that it's probably, isn't it mentioned in the bylaws?
Yes. Andrea.
Yeah, I have a question. We went past Anthony's report real fast. I just have a question. Anthony, unpaid staff, do we know the total number of unpaid staff? Are they documented and logged in somewhere on who we have on board?
That's actually a process that takes place in anticipation of an unpaid staff organization election. You know, some people, of course, someone hosts a show, and it's their show, it's obvious that person is a staff member, put in the qualifying hours. In the case of collectives, our task is to contact that collective and say, okay, who in your group put in the requisite number of hours in the time period concerned, which in the case of UPSO, membership qualification is 30 or more hours of work in the preceding 12 months. So to answer your question,
you
there is not an up-to-date list. There have been lists, but it'll require updating, and the thing that usually motivates updating it is an impending election.
Let me just say, I sit on the National Elections Committee, and I guess maybe I should have reported under committees. The National Elections Committee is discussing this idea very hotly because there are different standards apparently at every station for determining who qualifies as unpaid staff for participation in elections, and we're trying to figure out a, some way to standardize that so that there's a consistent way of measuring unpaid staff and who gets to vote in elections and so on. That's ongoing. Let me just say one other thing about the National Elections Committee. The National Elections Committee is pretty much at this point committed to trying to find a vendor who runs elections rather than to go do what we've done in the past, which is have the PMB hire a national and have the local stations hire local election supervisors. As people know, those have often been very controversial, and there's been there have been lawsuits and all kinds of things that have resulted from that process. So the hope is that with being able to go to a vendor who is a professional organization that handles elections, that will solve some of those problems. A RFP, request for proposals, has been drafted and will be sent out to a number of organizations. If any of you know an organization that does elections that you think we might not be in touch with, please email me and let me know, and I'll add them to the list. We're going to try and disseminate it as broadly as possible. And then there will be a fairly short turnaround time because the election process really needs to begin in March. This is for the national elections, which are coming up this year. I mean, yeah, the LSB elections, which are coming up this year.
Madam Chair, may I elaborate for a moment?
Yes.
As to who qualifies as unpaid staff, there's a default standard in the bylaws for stations that don't have a recognized unpaid staff organization. I think three of the five stations do not. We do. I think New York's is recognized, so I think at worst there are three standards, ours, New York's, and the default.
Okay. Tracy.
Hey, I was on.
Oh, I'm sorry, Laura. I apologize.
I was just going to propose or make a motion that we create an exploratory committee to talk about the town hall idea.
Is there a second to that motion? Okay. Is there any opposition to that motion? Do you wish to speak on the motion? Go ahead. Give Andrea a microphone.
Okay, I'd like to speak on what we're
doing. I know. But a motion has been made, and we'll take care of that. I'll come back to you, Tracy.
I guess to consolidate a little bit, I don't know if anybody would mind. I mean, that issue has been on the agenda of the Outreach Committee for a while. So I'm just wondering if, rather than dedicate yet another evening of the week, if folks would be amenable to having that be part of a project under outreach, and if folks would be interested in coming to that meeting and letting that be the vehicle. I'm not going to object to your thing, but it just seems like it would be nice to have fewer meetings.
Okay, all right. So the maker of the motion is okay with that. So the motion has morphed now. It is that we ask the Outreach Committee to begin to discuss the question of a town hall meeting and make a report back to us. And this is, you have a meeting scheduled for January 11th? This coming Wednesday.
This Wednesday at 7 p.m.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Can anybody come?
I can't.
You can't come?
What was the address again?
2022 Blake Street near Blake and Shattuck. It's not far from here at all.
I can send my ideas to you.
Or an envoy, perhaps.
If I had an envoy to send, I'd send one. Okay. Is there any objections to this motion?
No.
All right. So ordered. Now back to the previous discussion, which was the question of unpaid staff, and Tracy wanted to speak on that.
I should have updated this in the PNB report. I'm sorry, I just forgot. About 2 years ago, year and a half ago, then KPFK LSB member, now PNB member, Ken Aaron, who's, I guess, a computer coder by trade, made a database program, custom software for Pacifica called a staff registry database. The idea was that it would be software at all five stations that would allow unpaid staff to register and allow management to keep an ongoing tally and take some of the pressure off of both management and unpaid staff organizations to kind of reinvent the wheel from scratch all the time. That software, as I understand it, is in the process of being rewritten to accommodate KPFA's unpaid staff organization. And the reason KPFA's unpaid staff organization has different standards is because it predates the bylaws by a substantial number of years. It is GM recognized. Not to correct Anthony, I believe it's the only GM recognized UPSO in the system right now, although there are some at WBAI who would hope to be recognized. And there is some energy both in Houston and in Los Angeles to start up these kinds of things. And perhaps they will and perhaps they won't. And I think that it's around 215 unpaid staff for the last, as of the last, last iteration. I may have that number wrong, but off the top of my head, that's about what I recall. So, Andrea, that's like close to what the number is, maybe.
Okay.
It changes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's low 200s.
Okay. These are all works in progress, and we will continue with them. I think we're done with reports, and we're ready for the KFCF report. And Rich.
Not a lot to report. It's been a pretty quiet month with all the holidays and everything else. And basically, we got our annual report out, which is required by a California corporate code to be within 120 days of the end of the fiscal year, which means our deadline was December 30th, and we made it with a week and a half to spare. And I have a couple of copies of it here. Pass around if people want to see it. Fairly quiet other than that, and that's it.
Thank you. And you sent it to us on...
I sent it by email, too.
And I actually read it. Okay. Any questions for Rich? All right. Yes.
I would like to say that I really enjoyed hearing your cart you made about car donations. It was extremely polished. All of a sudden, I thought, wait a minute, my radio drifted somewhere. And then... Oh, no, that's Rich. Anyway, it's we should bring it back. I haven't heard it lately.
I think they pulled it. They had a complaint about it. Somebody didn't like it. And
who complained?
I don't know. I have a couple more I've got ready to produce that I'm going to send up. They're a little more humorous. I've just got to put them together as a KPFA version rather than a KFCF version.
I couldn't make a complaint about that. I thought it was great.
Okay. All right, we're ready to move on? Okay, so we are now at the point of old business where we have our continuing discussion on programming. The last item on the agenda will be a closed session, so I'm hoping that we can actually no more than 30 minutes. This is an open discussion. I don't think there's, we don't have a motion on the floor. It's an exchange of views on the issue of programming, and we began this discussion a few months ago, and it's been continuing. Yes, sure. I was just going to ask for a motion to suspend the rules and go into a committee of the whole so that we can have a discussion without having a motion on the floor. And I would appreciate if whoever makes the motion does it for a specific time. The agenda says 30 minutes. Someone want to make that motion? Okay.
So move.
Andrea.
Microphone, please.
Give her a microphone.
No, leave that.
The microphone man is.
I'm sorry. Did you say 30 minutes?
Yeah.
And is did point of, if we suspend the rules, that means that the members of the audience are welcome to participate as well?
I don't have any idea, but sure, I don't have any problem with that. Does anyone have a problem with that? As we'll all be confined to 2 minutes, okay? All right. Okay. All right. Is there any objection to suspending the rules and going into a meeting of the Committee of the Whole for 30 minutes for purposes of discussing programming? Seeing no objection, that's what we will do. Who wants to talk first? Okay. Go ahead, Frank. I just want to remind the timekeeper to keep time, please.
Okay. Basically, it's just a suggestion, since I spent a lot of time at the board operating job, noon to five, 2 days a week the past year, which now I don't know if most of you know, but I'm actually now not doing that, and I'm working for Flashpoints and Dennis Bernstein, which I'm a technical director there, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. I also do the board operating from 5 to 6 for that show. Anyways, at the board, a lot of times I receive calls all day when I'm there, noon to 5, when I was there. And I think I mentioned this to Andrew one time. I'm not sure if this has to do with our last conversation. Not really clear in my mind what we were exactly talking about last time. But a lot of the calls that I did get for a suggested type of show, I think I mentioned to you in your office, was the animal rights or a food rights show. And I think that would be a good idea because I'm not sure how I remember I did mention to you that the shows that we were putting on, the experimental time was like a 13-week trial period for some of these shows that you mentioned in a couple of meetings ago. And so I would just suggest that in the future, if we can, if we're going to do another experimental type show, one would probably be an animal rights show that I've heard a lot about, just being a board operator. And I think it's something, there's some ratio of numbers of listeners that are thinking something when one person calls in. So I don't know what that number is, but it's like 1,000 people or something per call. And it's when you're not soliciting the number, especially. So people have called, an animal rights show or something about food would be a really good show. And of course, the activist show that I mentioned before, you know, would be great, to a show run by the activists. That is all.
Okay. Any other board members? Virginia.
Thank you. I really liked those car ads, too. I didn't know that was you that did them. They were great. So, yeah, really great. Yeah, and let's see. I complained here before about unpaid staff shows not being promoted, and I've heard a whole bunch of it since then. So I really appreciate the promotions that are happening for cross-promoting shows, which I hadn't heard for a long time, and I've heard them lately. There's just one thing missing on that for me. For example, one thing I started listening to kind of by chance was Apex Express. And it's not just Asian Pacific stuff. It's had some really good Occupy stuff on. And I think I noticed that some of the promos still kind of ghettoize themselves. And I think it would be great if that was done a little bit less. And I would like to see, I can't read my handwriting. Pardon?
We weren't going to discuss specific shows with this. We were going to have a general conversation about what we'd make better programming.
It's all right.
I'm sorry. I'm just saying in general, I think cross-promoting shows is a good idea, and trying to realize that they're not just, you know, confined to their little thing, bailiwicks. Shows on nonviolent resistance, a really deep call-in type shows on that would be so appropriate with the Occupy things going on now. Making peace, since it is a pacifist station instead of military emphasis, which this society knows so well. Thanks. Thanks for letting us participate.
Sure. Okay. I'll call. I want to say something. The other day I was listening to NPR 91.7, and they announced. They said, if you in case you don't see our schedule, we want to let you know about program changes, and this program's going to be at this time, and this program's going to be at this time, and we're doing this. And one of those things was something I actually care about. But anyway. Be that as it may, I didn't get to have anything to say about it. So I called a friend of mine who I know is an active participant in the station. She actually does a lot of stuff during their fund drives. And I asked her how they did this. And I thought this was really interesting. So what they do, first of all, they send out to their members, and she said email, so I guess most of their members are on email, a questionnaire about changing programming. What, you know, when would you like to see this show? When would, which show would you drop if you had to drop a show? Which, all that kind of stuff. And then they have these big discussions, which are to which members are invited to come and participate, and they talk about making changes. Then the program director makes the decision about the changes. And then for 2 months before any of the changes are implemented, they make, they have big announcements on the air. You know, at the end of a show, they say, after January 1st, this show will no longer be broadcast at this time. It will be broadcast starting at this time on this day. All of the stuff that I thought was like, when you're talking about changing programming, it seemed to me really a really brilliant and inclusive way to do it. And I'm hoping that when changes are made at KPFA, that we will do that, that we will involve listeners from the beginning. It's one of the reasons I think we should... one of the reasons I think we should try and get as many email addresses as we can from our listeners. Sasha.
Well, when I suggested this discussion, part of it was because hopefully we're not, although I'm not convinced about this, we're not just fighting with one another and it's taken on a life of its own and all we really all want to do is win. I'm not sure when what, but when. And I'm not, you know, that may be, I think that's a good piece of it, actually, at this point. But I would assume that one of the things we're fighting about is programming, because that's what we are as a radio station, and the only important thing that we do, really, is radio programming. I don't, hope we're not fighting about, you know, where the photocopy machine is placed. sorry. Although, we probably would if we ever had it up for discussion, wouldn't we? I can see that taking an hour. Anyway, okay, time is running. And one of the things that we got into so far was sort of whether I called it professional. People took umbrage on that, you know, using that word. But let's just say quality sound or what was the word they were using with you just now? Anyway, classy. Just a good sound and how important that is or isn't to people. I also feel like that they're probably... are not huge differences amongst us or amongst staff members in terms of where our political politics are. And so for me, that's kind of a starting point. If our politics are more or less the same and we see certain things happening in this world and we think that this station is there to do coverage that you can't get elsewhere and information that is suppressed by mainstream media, how do we do that better than we're doing it now? I kind of like our discussion to focus around that. And for me, one of the questions is that I found from some of the feedback here is for some people, they don't think we do sound very well. I mean, it seemed to me, and maybe I'm mistaken about that, that whether the sound was something someone could tolerate listening to or not really didn't matter as long as we were putting somebody on the air who normally can't get on the air anywhere. And so maybe we should talk about quality, how important it is to each of us.
Okay. I have Janet and then Mal. Janet's taking yourself off the list. Mal and Rich and Henry. Okay, Mal. Yeah, give that man a microphone.
Oh, it's right here. I want to inject in the conversation something that I raised in email some time ago. If we're talking about programming, it seems to me that it is important to discuss the role of Pacifica Radio in the political world. And while I'm sure there are differences on this, I would like to respectfully say that, in my opinion, and I think we ought to strive for this, the role of the station is not to be an active participant in any political movement, but to present to the listeners objective, as far as possible, reality of the political world. And I think that's very important that our station not be identified as a participant in any transient political fight, because that makes us suspect to a huge part of the audience.
Rich followed by Henry.
A few years ago, we did a survey at KFCF. We used SurveyMonkey. And it was really interesting seeing some of the results. Some of the things that kept coming up that people wanted to hear in the way of programming was more environmental programming and more documentaries. Those were the two that were just huge. And I'm not sure what they meant by documentaries, if they meant radio-produced documentaries or some of these other documentaries that we play excerpts of on the air during the pledge drive. But those were two things that I heard that came up over and over. Other things that were mentioned that people wanted is they wanted something along the lines of a alternative home gardening show that talked about, you know, gardening from a non-toxic, non-polluting, you know, alternative viewpoint of, you know, not Monsanto, you know, hybrid GM seeds and other things. And that was something I heard over and over. Also, one of the things that we actually produced for a while and it got a very good response, but the person doing it moved on, was a show on parenting, and it was called Progressive Parenting. She did a really good job on that. She moved to Austin, unfortunately, and we lost her and really didn't find anybody to replace her. So, you know, that is something that came out of it, and, you know, we've, you know, looking for ideas that we experiment with there, but part of it sometimes is finding the people to do the shows who have the expertise and also could be trained to be on the radio. And but there, you know, I think there are ideas out there. We just need to figure out, you know, what we're doing and figure out, you know, who our target demographic is, whether it's just serving the listeners we have or if we're looking at doing something to bring in, you know, larger number of listeners. One of the things I found interesting about the Progressive Parenting show was it was bringing in a lot of younger listeners, people in their 30s, you know, in late 20s. And what surprised me was 80% of our callers were men for the show talking about parenting issues, which was a big surprise both to the host and me. And it was, you know, but I thought it was a good idea. And, you know, I'd like to see those sort of ideas pursued.
I like that idea a lot. I wasn't here. I guess there was a previous installment of this conversation, so forgive me if I'm repeating something. But I do think we need to. I wish we would explore the idea of some children's programming on the weekends. I think that is another opportunity also to bring young families into the community, and I think it's something that can be done well on radio. I know when I was a kid, that was a long time ago, but. I love listening to radio. Another thing, I generally feel like KPFA does very little about science and specifically about global warming. I'm not sure. I don't know good ways to do global warming, but I do feel that if there are people around in 100 or 200 years, they're going to look back at this era and wonder how everybody was sleepwalking into the disaster we're headed toward. And, you know, in this political season, there's scarcely a mention of it. It's like we're just marching straight ahead toward the cliff. And Michio Kaku does some, you know, some good stuff, but a lot of it is space and physics and atomic stuff that, I don't know, maybe some people are interested in it. And Terra Verde is very uneven. I used to think it was on Friday midday. I used to think it was a very good show, but it doesn't really fill the bill for me. And so generally, I do wish we could find a way to bring more attention to the environmental disasters we're facing. But the other thing I want to say is that to me the most important thing, I mean, we all have different ideas, and the most important thing, though, is to somehow or other, I mean, I know there's been a lot of controversy and disagreement about program council, but somehow we have to have a procedure for getting new shows on, developed and brought on the grid.
Yes, yes.
Andrea followed by Laura.
Yeah, I guess what I wanted to theme my comments around the notion of balance, because I feel like we get into some of these like false dichotomies and false kind of conflicts. It's not this or that. Maybe it's a question of how much of this or how much of that. You know, I definitely want to know what's going on internationally and locally. You know, it's not like I want international news or local news. You know, I need it all. You know, I'm actually, KPFA is the only thing I listen to. I don't check out NPR. But I also feel like KPFA is, you know, the institution that we're a part of here is not just a radio station. It is a community institution, and I feel a lot of responsibility around education. And I feel like the opportunity to, I just love it so much when I'm out talking about KPFA, and, you know, I'm out at the Occupy, and there's, you know, young people of color who are, like, into radio, and I'm like, wow, man, have you checked out this apprenticeship program? And they haven't heard about it, and I feel excited to be able to point them in that direction. And I guess when we think about, like, the professional sound, you know, and, like, of course I want to hear something that's kind of smooth and polishy on my ear and so forth, but if I only get that, then I know that somebody's not having a learning experience. Somebody's not having an opportunity to get better. And I guess what I would love to see is how can we strengthen mechanisms for taking and empowering our people locally and to turn them into really wonderful radio personalities and journalists and that kind of thing. So I don't see the either or of that. You know, when I hear something, if I hear, you know, I'm listening on the news or something like that, and somebody's coughing or whispering about their coffee or something like that, over it, or some little glitch that happened this week, it, you know, you just smile. It's not a big, you know, I don't freak out and have a heart attack. Bummer. I want my other 2 minutes. I'm gonna collect later.
Okay. Laura.
Oh, wait, we suspended the rules. We suspended the rules. But 2 minutes is good.
Laura, followed by Jack.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that we should be training people. I think our apprenticeship program really needs to be more integrated into the whole station. But you can train people in hours where not many people are listening. And that's how they do it at Calix in the middle of the night. That's where I learned to program. So you don't have to impose training on your major audiences. And I think getting back to Sasha's idea of quality, I think we have trouble with that at KPFA. We're afraid of people who have talent. And radio, it requires talent to be able to communicate. Not everybody can do it. And we also... Well, I think that professionalism is thought of as a bad word. You know, there are people who know how to do radio and who are not tapped into. And we don't have really good organization across the network about how to do that, how to identify talent, and not to put people over other people, but some people are better on air, and we just have to recognize that and use that. And other people can be better supporting them. So we need to find better mechanisms for working this out. We've been trying to do it, and I think we're not there yet, so we need to keep working. Like the program council idea, at the national level, one of the things that's on the proposal is that, you know, there's listener reps who are supposed to get up to speed about how to program radio. Well, it's a very difficult, it's something that you need years to get to. So you just can't, I'm all for listener input, I'm all for community input, but we have to figure out ways to do that where it makes sense so the radio is still listenable.
Okay, Jack, followed by Mal.
I think that one way of approaching this complexity of issues of programming is to recognize that we have at our disposal a very unused capacity, and that is that we have both KPFA and KPFB. And once upon a time, in the distant past, I can remember that far back, KPFB was used for broadcasting city council meetings. It was used for other kinds of purposes. And we operate under the notion that all we have, and in some instances, KPFA and KPFB were broadcasting the same thing, like the evening news, for example. So we're operating here as if what we only have is KPFA. And we should be operating, in my view, with the notion that we have both KPFA and KPFB. And it seems to me that if we look at it that way, then what happens is that the discussion that we have about programming, where there are very differing approaches to what and who and under what circumstances should be on the air, that discussion is contained in a much broader vessel, and it'll be an easier discussion.
Okay. So the last three names on the list are Mal, Sasha, and Dan, and then we'll be out of time, and then we'll be going to continue this discussion.
I just want to say a couple things. One is...
Mike.
Oh, right. I just want to say a couple things. One is that listening on the radio or television or anywhere to what I already know and think is boring. And I don't want to listen to that, certainly not all the time. Another thing I want to say is that I think KPFA would be better to return to its original purpose, and among other things, let's see some drama again and a little more classical music. Finally, I want to say that one interesting thing that I think interests audiences is debates. And we used to have differing points of view on KPFA and sometimes debates between them. We don't seem to do that much anymore. I would like to go back to having Cap Weinberger or his current clone on the air so we can debate him. It just makes better radio and is more interesting politics.
I just want to say that I don't really care at all if anyone in this room listens to KPFA. I want to reach people who aren't getting their news and information from us. I want to reach people who aren't getting the news and information every one of us in this room will find a way to get by some other method if KPFA didn't exist. That's who I want as my audience. So that's the kind of discussion I was hoping we would have. Who is our audience? That, to me, is the starting point. Who do we want them to be? And then how do we get from here to there? You know, this discussion about, you know, there's several different ideas, a program on this or a program on that. To me, I'm shuddering. Some of them were wonderful ideas. But I even wonder if that isn't a dated 60s idea. Who the heck remembers to tune in Thursday at 1:30 p.m. for a half an hour to listen to the program on X? I don't. I think it's a very small part of the audience who's going to do that. I think we have to look at what we're doing and figure out if what we're doing makes any sense in this modern media world where no one even has a radio in their home any longer, folks. Come on. I think we have to go to the basics here and start there. Somewhere along the line, someone will say, we ought to have more culture, we ought to have more environmental programs, or we ought to whatever, and that might be a point of discussion. But to me, what is our basic schedule? Do we really want to give, you know, it's like the Chronicle deciding to give its front page to people who've never written before because it would be a good community gesture. Do we really want to do this with our morning drive time? Let's throw in the business section and the sports section, two of the Chronicle, while we're at it, and give them other hours. Come on, use some sense here. Who do we want to reach, and how are we going to do it? To me, that's the starting point of this discussion.
Thank you, Sasha. Dan.
Okay, so this is a, I think, an interesting conversation. I've heard a lot of things I'd like to respond to. There's not time. I'd like to see us debate Mal's position about political restraint, which I think is an interesting conversation to have. I think people have said things about how to experiment with different kinds of programming. I like what Jack said. There was conversation a couple of years ago about the whatever the side bands are or whatever they're called. But there's also fundamentally frustration as to how this conversation proceeds from kind of bull session, which is nice, to action, right? And I'm reminded about what Henry said before about the tech committee. I think everybody in Pacifica understands that we need to figure out how to combine other technologies with radio going forward. That's great. We all understand that. Nothing's happening. You know, the former executive or station manager at BAI, Tony Riddle, had an idea. He said we should review all the programming every year or perhaps every 2 years. We should tell all the programs, you're on for a year. There's no guarantee of, you know, permanent spot. At the end of the year, we're going to review and see what you're doing, whether it's any good, whether people are listening, whether you're raising any money, whether you're involving new people, whatever the criteria are. But it's a regular review. But I, mainly, though, what I'd like to see is how the volunteer part of the organization and the staff part of the organization can work together to have a kind of comprehensive conversation about programming that actually leads to something besides another conversation.
Thank you very much. Okay, so we've come to the end of this point on the agenda. And it'll be on the agenda in the future, and perhaps at some point we'll make some motions and take some action. At this point, we are going to go into a closed session to discuss the evaluation of the IGM, and so I need to ask the audience members and Andrew to leave. Do we need a motion to... Yeah, we can have a two-minute break. Let's have a motion to have a two-minute break and then to go into closed session.
So moved.
Thank you. Any problem? Okay, good. So be it.
So be it.
2 minutes. 2 minute break.